Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. And we're going to start with an article from AARP, the magazine. This is from Upfront, What I Know Now, Some Words of Wisdom from Jean Smart, the actress, on being kind, getting naked on screen, she won't, and honoring the ones you love. Using college wisely. I decided in high school that I wanted to act and to major in theater in college, but I didn't know anyone who did that for a living. My mom thought it was frivolous. She and my dad grew up during the Depression and saw college, they had both attended, as a privilege, not to be wasted. As soon as my mother started seeing me in shows, though, she said she started thinking, oh, maybe she's on to something here. Being in It Girl again. Designing Women was a hit, but the reaction to Hacks has been just enormous. The attention is lovely, but it's kind of baffling. The advice I would give to other actors is, you know, just don't go away. Eventually they'll find you again. She laughs. Ignore most of the naysayers. I try not to read all reviews. It's not healthy. But if I get a great review and someone sticks it under my nose, I'm very happy to read it. Drama or comedy? If I had to do one or the other, I would probably pick drama, because you can always be funny in your personal life. And if you're funny all the time at work, maybe you're more of a drama queen at home. She laughs again. The reason she won't get naked. God bless people who are that uninhibited, but when I had the opportunity to do that, I thought, how could I face my poor father? He would be embarrassed in front of his friends. Although I've thought a couple of times recently, well, maybe I could have briefly gone topless. I mean, they still look good, not as good as they did, but pretty good. Everyone needs to feel seen. My children get frustrated with me because I talk to strangers. They'll be like, Mom, my God, just walk away. But I can't. I can't imagine anything worse than being on the streets and people walking by you literally as if you're not there. Not there. I said to my kids when I first went to New York City, even if you can't give money, don't walk by someone like they're not there. Just say, no, I'm so sorry, I can't today. Or hello, or anything. Just to acknowledge their presence. You see them. You hear them. Plastic surgery for all. But not for me, not yet. I don't take care of my skin. I'm terrible. But I'm just lucky. I've got good skin. I've done a little Botox because I tend to scowl. I can't look angry on camera all the time. I tried filler once, and it was not pleasant. I didn't get the results I wanted. Now I'm dying to get my eyes done, but I'm terrified. People I want to work with. Sarah Paulson, Joaquin Phoenix, and Anthony Hopkins. I've been in love with him since in high school. And I just worked with two others on my list, Margot Robbie and Brad Pitt in Babylon, a movie out later this year. Brad Pitt! And finally, celebrate the people you love while you can. I've been trying to decide what to do with my husband's ashes. Actor Richard Gilliland died of a heart condition in 2021. He was of Irish descent, and I thought I would scatter the ashes in Dublin last summer, but it was too soon for the kids. A year before he died, though, I threw him a big surprise party for his 70th birthday. Everybody who was near and dear to him was there, and it was really, really great. Oh, God, they roasted him mercilessly. So I haven't had any kind of a service, because I thought, I can't top that. This article was told to Judith Newman. Jean Smart, 70, stars in the hit HBO Max comedy Hacks, which is currently streaming, and the upcoming movie Babylon. Now we're going to start on a new adventure. This from the magazine The Complete Guide to Memory. and it's put out by Centennial Health. And this will be an ongoing adventure for a while. Section 1, Making Memories. The ability to conjure up the past starts with input from the environment in the present. And that information is then stored in the brain. Here's how the process works. Our recollections may seem like fixed video recordings, but that's not the case. A remembered experience coalesces from a constant flow of sensation and emotion, converging and changing on the screen of the brain. My 80th birthday was especially memorable. I had been looking forward to it for weeks. On the day of my party, I walked downstairs to the decorated dining room. Streamers and balloons in purple, my favorite color, and gold for my golden birthday, when age and birth date match, floated above the table. The table itself was covered with a purple tablecloth. On top of it sat a cake frosted in white. A banner printed out on our dot matrix printer read, "Happy Birthday." The extravagance delighted me. 30 years later, why do I remember this birthday at all, let alone in such detail? Excuse me, that was not her 80th birthday. That was her 8th birthday. I hardly remember my trip to the grocery store last week now. Why did this memory survive when countless other recollections have faded from my mind? Understanding how the brain remembers past events provides some clues. Scientists call recollections of autobiographical events, such as my 8th birthday party, episodic memories. These are memories of a specific event that occurred at a particular time and place and are often rich in details. When we recall a vivid episodic memory, it can feel like our brains have recorded events in the same way a video camera records a movie. But neuroscientists have shown that this is not true. Instead, our brains collate perceptions and other information to create new memories. The modern science of memory began in the 1950s with a patient named Henry Molaison, or H.M. There's more on him later in this magazine. Debilitated by chronic epilepsy, H.M. agreed to try an experimental procedure in which a surgeon removed the parts of his brain causing the seizures, including most of the hippocampi. Although effective in eliminating the seizures, the surgery had a surprising and unintended consequence. H.M. developed arteriograde amnesia. He could recollect many events from before the surgery, but was unable to form new episodic memories. Through his case, scientists discovered that the hippocampus is necessary to form new episodic memories. Even more profoundly, his case provided the first clue that specific brain regions are important for selective aspects of cognition. The hippocampus is nestled deep within the brain behind the temples. To reach it, information travels across neural thoroughfares from other regions of the brain. For example, a pathway called the ventral vision stream delivers information to the hippocampus about what we see, while the dorsal visual stream conveys where those objects are located in space. The hippocampus gathers and integrates that information, weaving a unique neural pattern that is the basis of each new memory. And a little sidebar box emphasizes networks of neurons throughout the body and brain constantly interact to collect the sensations and thoughts that ultimately power the memories of our lives. How we reconstruct the past. To encode my 8th birthday, my brain did not record a video of that day. Instead, my hippocampus encoded a network of associations between where I was, my childhood dining room, and the memory details, the purple and gold decorations, the cake, and the banner. Now, when cued with the salient details, such as gold streamers, I can recall my birthday. The gold streamers activate part of that specific memory signature and initiate the reactivation of the rest of the memory through the network of associations. In doing so, the fuller memory is constructed and the details of my birthday party come back to me. The hippocampus's ability to create and reconstruct associations facilitates cognition beyond encoding memories. Conjure a memorable event, like a favorite birthday, in as much as detail as possible. Now, reimagine the event, but change one important feature, such as what the weather was like or who was there. This type of elaborate imagination requires the hippocampus too, both reconstructing the past memories and constructing the imaginary events depends on the hippocampus's ability to create associative networks. Yet, memory reconstruction can go awry. Shortly after I began to research memory, I visited my family for the holidays. Flipping through old photo albums, I ran across pictures from my 8th birthday. The photos captured the decorations and cake as I remembered them, but there is a huge discrepancy between my memory and the photos. When I reconstructed the memory, I superimposed the correct details onto the wrong dining room. 2 years after that birthday, my parents renovated my childhood home. I remember the party occurring in the renovated dining room, but the pictures prove we were in the old house. This memory error is a byproduct of memory reconstruction. Such mistakes may seem disconcerting, but usually these fabrications are benign or even helpful. When we do not remember every detail of a memory, our brains automatically fill in the gaps with something plausible. For example, I cannot really remember the plates on my birthday table, but in my memory, I see the ones we had when I was a kid. I must have forgotten the room in which my 8th birthday party took place, but remembered our dining room table. So, my brain supplied a dining room for the memory, but in this case, the wrong one. Although such fabrication may cause problems, most of the time, a slightly fudged memory is good enough. Most important details. Today, I experienced thousands of things. A trip to a coffee shop, a crowded subway ride, a gift from a friend. Tomorrow, I will remember only a fraction of these events, and even fewer a year from now. Why do we remember the things that we remember? Scientists hypothesize that people are more likely to recall experiences that might be important in the future. If you commute to work every day, you do not need to remember the specific details of each trip, like the seat you chose. Small variations and similar experiences rarely change how we behave in the future. Thus, these are not important details to call upon. But remembering especially rewarding events can help guide future choices. If you have a great meal at a restaurant, you want to remember it so you can return. The brain signals unexpectedly rewarding events by releasing dopamine, which marks the memory as potentially important in the future. In the hippocampus, dopamine makes the connection between neurons stronger. It even causes neurons to change shape to tighten the link between them. These neuronal changes create more durable memory signatures. Dopamine also triggers the hippocampus to replay memories. Memory replay happens immediately after the event and also during sleep. This replay is critical for taking new memories and storing them for long-term use. Through these mechanisms, our brains prioritize certain memories, whether an exquisite birthday or a new restaurant. But dopamine is not the only neural transmitter at work. The neural transmitter cortisol also shapes and strengthens memory when events are acutely stressful. Our memories feel like they are captured and frozen in time, but the act of remembering always reconstructs past experience, making our recollections a work in progress throughout our lives. The author of this, Aaron Kendall Braun, is a postdoctoral researcher studying the cognitive neuroscience of memory at Columbia University in New York. Now, here's a sidebar. Memory hack. Find a quiet place. To reflect on your past or consolidate your daily memories to preserve them for the future, it helps to have a safe and quiet place to reflect. Find a spot where you can explore your memories without distractions. It could be a room at home or any other safe place that allows you to be especially introspective. Or it could be a favorite park bench or a familiar seat on the bus where you find it easy to be inwardly reflective. Select something you want to remember, from the dialogue in a book you read, to the details of a discussion, to the names of your classmates in the sixth grade. If you want to work on improving your memory, straightforward exercises could be the best way. In fact, research has shown that the single best way to improve any aspect of your memory is to practice retrieval of that type of information specifically. If you want to improve your memory for autobiographical events, you can practice by journaling your experiences of the day, or recording what you can recall of past experiences that you want to revisit and preserve. If you want to improve your short-term powers of recall, try the card game Concentration, or any number of memory exercises you can find online and in smartphone apps. This advice was by Keith Harari, Ph.D., and Eileen Donahue Robinson, Ph.D. Now back to AARP, the magazine, and we're going to look at the Money Saver section. Going sold. Online auctions for collectibles are a bustling business. Here's an example of what some everyday attic finds recently fetched once the e-gavel fell. A Schwinn Stingray bike, $1,800. A gumball machine by Ford, $196.50. A Duck Hunt video game for Nintendo, $11,243. Vintage Coleman gas lantern, $261. A Smith Corona Sterling typewriter in case, circa 1956, $191.50. A Batman and Robin walkie-talkies, $330. A 10 Circus clown robot car, $750. The road to sell. Want cash for your treasure? Take the advice of Timothy Gordon, a professional appraiser. Check the competition. Look at auction sites, such as Live Auctioneers and eBay, and do a general internet search for past sales of your item to get an idea of what it's worth. If it's less than $500, try selling it on eBay, the biggest auctions website. It's instant money, Gordon says. Find expertise. If what you have is super special, or there's a possibility of it, call in a pro, he adds. That may mean getting a professional appraiser or consigning it to an auction house. Both will cost you. An auctioneer may charge 20% of your sale price, but chances of getting top dollar are greater this way. Match with the right auctioneer. You'll profit most by going with an auction house that specializes in whatever you're selling, whether it's signed art, 50s furniture, or old baseball cards. Get to the right person who have developed, or the right people who have developed that specific clientele, says Gordon. Now we're going to start on Money Saver articles. Welcome to the first entry in a four-part series guiding you through common and challenging dilemmas that can have a lasting impact on your financial and overall well-being. And this is brought to you by Marcus by Goldman Sachs. Your next big work decisions. Exit quickly? Retire together? What the pros suggest. This is by Karen Hubie. Choice number one. It's retirement time. How do I structure my departure? The best way to leave depends on your seniority and responsibilities, says H. Jeffrey Spivak, a senior financial planner at Citizens Bank Wealth Management in New York. Try these approaches. Cold turkey. give 2 to 3 weeks' notice. That's the minimum employers expect, and it's a standard courtesy for easing the transition. 3 months' notice. Higher-level workers should consider a longer lead time to allow for setting up a replacement. The long runway. If you are a manager with broad project-based responsibilities, giving 6 months or more of notice can be the best way to ensure that the work you care about gets handled properly, Spivak says. Giving a lot of notice can create problems, however. You may be treated differently by your boss or colleagues, so evaluate your circumstances carefully. Alternative arrangements. If you're not dead set on leaving, you might ask for what would keep you happy at work. That could mean anything. More pay? A 3 or 4 day weekend, Spivak says. Employers are generally amenable, especially given a worker shortage these days. You have leverage. Whatever you choose, inform your boss about your retirement plans first, then your close coworkers. Next, give a formal retirement letter to your human resources department. It's in your best interest to behave professionally and leave on good terms. If you decide you want to consult in retirement, you might need your former employer for references or future work. Give ample notice and keep networks intact. Here's choice number two. My husband is retiring. Should I retire too, or should I keep working? Taking the plunge together has its appeal, but there can be downsides. The financial payoffs of working after midlife are greater for women, who usually have worked fewer years than for men, according to research by Nicole Maestas, Associate Professor of Healthcare Policy at Harvard Medical School. By a husband's retirement age, a woman might be in her peak earning years, says Wes Moss, managing partner at Atlanta-based Capital Investment Advisors. He suggests analyzing two important factors. First is security. Estimate whether your savings, Social Security, and any pension will cover your needs. Factor in the impact of any debt, big upcoming expenses, and if you aren't yet eligible for Medicare, the cost of private health insurance. Weigh all that against the gains of postponing retirement. Working another couple of years could help you get rid of debt, save more, and boost your future Social Security payments. Happiness. Consider how much social and intellectual satisfaction you get from your work. Are you prepared to leave that? If so, Moss says, make sure you have a robust list of activities to take work's place. And we have time for one more section, choice number three. I've gotten tired of going through the same daily grind with the same people for a large organization I can't really influence. I've been thinking that I would be happier if I left the corporate world and went freelance. Is this the right move? The pandemic may give you a taste of what freelancing could be like. A flexible schedule, no dress code, and a pet-friendly office, among other attractive perks. But there's a danger in romanticizing the freelance life. There are plenty of potential drawbacks, says Sharon Givens, a psychotherapist and founder of Visions Counseling and Career Center in Columbia, South Carolina. She suggests you consider the following factors. Finances. It's often not enough to match your current salary because your expenses as a contractor can be significantly higher. If you have to pay for your own medical insurance and any travel expenses, these are significant costs you have to budget for, Givens says. Plus, your taxes may go up since you don't have an employer paying half your Social Security taxes. What's more, freelance income can be highly irregular, so you'll need to have a cushion for at least a few months' expenses. Clients. Who will hire you? For a comfortable freelance life, a broad network is critical, so you should have that in place before you take the plunge. You're likely not ready if you only have one or two potential sources of work. Aim to secure a contract before leaving your corporate job. Responsibilities. Freelancing means not only performing your typical professional role, but also taking on new duties, such as marketing and accounting. And when your computer acts up, a corporate IT staff isn't going to swoop in and help you out. These additional tasks can cost you time, money, peace of mind, or maybe all three. Solitude. As a freelancer, you're usually a team of one. You have to know what drives you, Given said. If you are motivated by sharing goals with colleagues and having that social interaction throughout the workday, freelancing may not be the right choice. And it looks like we can squeeze in the fourth choice here. I'm retiring and losing my steady paycheck. I'm nervous about making big withdrawals from my retirement account. What can I do to fix that? Your working days may be over, but your paycheck doesn't have to be. Regularly reoccurring withdrawals made from your retirement stash and deposited directly into your everyday bank account can create a sense of normalcy as you shift from saving to spending, said Adam Woskowski, a Boston area financial planner. If you have a 401k, your plan may let you sign up for automatic monthly withdrawals, so you don't have to initiate occasional large withdrawals. Don't drain your account too quickly, though. A safe withdrawal rate depends on many factors, including your age and your investments. But a reasonable start for a portfolio that is split 50-50 between stock and bond funds is to withdraw up to 4% of that money the first year, then raise that amount in later years to keep up with inflation. Divide each year's annual number by 12 to determine the size of your monthly paycheck. Some 401k plans don't give you the option for periodic withdrawals, and some charge a fee for each withdrawal, which can add up over time. Then consider transferring all or part of your 401k to an IRA at a brokerage that doesn't charge such fees. You can schedule regular transfers from that IRA to your everyday bank account. Look for an IRA with low-cost investment choices. Another option is to buy an immediate annuity. In return for your payment, an insurance company can provide guaranteed payments for the rest of your life. This can be a good source of stable income, but you have to be willing to give up immediate access to a large sum of money. And a couple more tips for saving money. This is number 55. Buy a smart sprinkler controller. Tell the controller what kind of soil, plants, or lawns you are watering, and the device will factor in the weather conditions and weather forecast to deliver exactly the amount of water your plants need. And check out bamboo towels. Replace one-use paper towels with thick, super-absorbent bamboo towels that can be used many times and then tossed in the compost. You'll save money while saving the environment. Well, folks, we've run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, imprint impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.